Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 469. Nice. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am one of your hosts, Todd Oxtra, joined by Charlie Carden.
Todd, how could you? You're so wholesome, and I'm the bad boy on the show. Everybody knows that. Nice. Stop biting my shit. No, I'm good. Sunday night, we had an outing yesterday, us and a bunch of friends at the historic Jackson, Michigan prison. Are you familiar at all?
Oh, yeah. Wait, it's historic now?
Well, yeah, it was built in 1830. Is it closed? Well, yeah. No, it was. Oh. It's a real. We were in the prison yard with all the prisoners. No, it's a prison that was right along the railroad line back in the day. So
yeah,
you know, from Detroit and other cities in Michigan, they could ship people there. But yeah, now it's pretty much ruins. And the parts of it that are accessible to the public are great for photography.
Reopen a new one.
That was always a punchline. My uncle always liked to say, like, "Hey, where did Charlie go to school? Oh, he went to State. You know, Jackson."
Well, the pier has a prison too, which it's hidden away. You pass it on the highway, and you're like, "Oh, the prison! Hey, prisoners!"
there's a big one in Ionia County too. You go along M21, which runs out of Flint, goes right by it. So,
yeah. And we have Orange New Black and Shakopee over here because
prison,
but it's like just minimum security. Yeah.
Oh well. I don't know. That sounds like a recipe for shenanigans. But anyway, we had fun at the prison site. It was a pro photographer of mine and his wife, who's a professional photographer. A bunch of our people. It was a Star Wars thing. It was a lot of fun. Got to break up some new outfits, so it was pretty cool. April built these beautiful robes. It was Jedi robes and tunics. It was a cool deal. But that's all the cosplay talk that I'm allowed. That was less than 10 seconds.
And I'm going to do a real insertion right now, because if you're watching the show, there's a door behind Charlie. Charlie, is that a gateway to the third dimension? Is it a small toilet? Is it a bucket that you use as a toilet? What's behind that door?
That is where I lived when I shared this house with my ex-wife. That was my apartment. But now, no, that's actually the sump pump is in there. But sorry to spoil the mystery.
It gets its own room. How special.
It does. It does. My stepfather built all this before, when my mom took the house back over, before we bought it. He redid this room. And so that's why I have this delightful studio. So, but I don't have a door. I wish I had a door.
You have a door for your sump pump. So you know what?
I have a dump for the sump pump.
You already had a game.
I did. I have to turn around and wedge it. But anyway, this has been some great inside baseball. But yes, we're here. We're doing
our thing. There'll be a trivia game in the future, Charlie.
There was, yes, your SFU trivia. But we'd like to kick off every show by taking care of some business and giving homage to the delightful people that make it possible for us to produce all the extra fun content over on our Secret Friends Unite Patreon, which is over at patreon.com/secretfriendsunite, where you can visit. Click for a 7-day free trial and check out all the fun stuff that we do. Todd and I do a great show about comic books called Spinnerack. I have a fun show called The Facts of Geek Life, where myself and a guest take on a classic show and a season of that and break down a couple of episodes. We have a rocking good time. But yeah, you can check that out for free. You also get our programs ad-free over there. And we're also to be found on YouTube Podcasts, which I think is great. It's more easy access, and we're super happy about that. But anyway, our top tier folks, we'd like to give them some love on the Friends with Benefits level. John Sidorf, the awesome Phoenix Sisters cosplay, Mr. Brendan Myers, Corey in HD, and friend of the show, Matthew Keel. Our top tier folks on our BFFs level, the awesome Nice family of the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and your friend and mine, Missy Mershon, who I'll see this weekend when we're doing a chapter event at a local comic.
Very good.
I haven't seen her in a long time.
Tell them I said
I will do that. But anyway, we love you folks. Again, patreon.com/secretfriendsunite. If you're listening to this and want to see what all the hubbub is about, have a free trial, and then, as Arnie says, stick around. Oh,
yeah.
Well, my goodness. One thing that's not sticking around is the timelessness of this cover that we picked this week. We have from December of 1988. This is volume one of Alpha Flight, which was Marvel's Canadian superhero team. This is issue 69, part 3 of 4. So, ooh, you're in trouble if you go to your local comic shop and don't use Marvel Unlimited and can only get this. Hopefully there's a nice catch up.
It's not available on Marvel Unlimited either, Charlie.
Really? But you know, Marvel Unlimited, they've come so far, but they don't have everything. Even their own licensed stuff, it's surprising because I know I've had a subscription to Marvel Unlimited for over a decade, and I will frequently go in, I want more Web of Spider-Man, I want more Fantastic Four. And I feel like they've come really far, but I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of comics has Marvel, but tens of thousands of comics have they published, you know, since 1961 or even going further back because they have the timely stuff, you know what I mean? So, well, that's a shame. Well, I will admit that I don't know a ton about what's going on here. I recognize a few characters. I see, Heather Hudson's character is all the way in the background. What's it? Was she Protector?
She was the Vindicator, right?
Vindicator. I see Sasquatch. They have a robot guy.
Was it doing... Box, right?
No, but Box and Puck was the little guy, but yes. I don't see him here.
Yes.
And then the woman who is in the middle ground, don't know that character. Do we know
who that is? She was the daughter of Shaman named Elizabeth Two Youngman.
Okay.
But I don't think she ever got a official title, but Shaman, her father, did. Shaman.
Yeah. See, because I have read, I've got a print copy of the first couple issues because I love that you have on the first issue that you have the covers kind of put the characters pushing through Marvel Comics, said step aside, there's new heroes in town or whatever, and it was written and drawn by John Byrne, who was a British American Canadian, and he created the team in the X-Men earlier in the 70s because there's a male version. Was it Guardian that wore the same outfit as?
Yes,
the
Guardian was James Hudson. He was the first person, right. And Heather Hudson was his
great
wife.
Picture where he's on the cover and he's just socking Wolverine in the face and knocking.
Well, that's the whole thing. They were introduced through the whole. Wolverine was discovered by Alpha Flight when he was essentially escaping Weapon X.
Right. Yeah. Which they adapted into the bits and pieces into the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, mm-hmm. which we will be talking about those pretty quickly here because we're going to do an X-Men arc as we ramp up to Deadpool. But anyway, yes. So they are fighting some unknown characters. So the Shaman is sending a blast out to 1, 2, 3, 4 characters. And in the lower right-hand corner, at last, Dash, and this is when things go off the rails, China Force.
Yes. This is China Force. And I can tell you who's in China Force, Charlie.
Yeah.
So China Force consists.
It does consist of that. Yes, take it away. Yes,
I like Swiss cheese. Dream Queen is one of the characters, but China Force actually consists of Rabbit, Rat, Ox and Snake, because of the, you think of like all of the Chinese year. But
your placemat at any old school Chinese restaurant.
Correct. Right. But Monkey was a former member. He's no longer in it. But this comic also included Purple Man. It also included appearances by Beta Flight, who essentially is the members in training.
It was B for bench.
Yep. And Purple Girl was one of them, which I thought was interesting daughter. And then there was Laura Dean and Goblin. And then the whole thing about the crux of this was China Force was trying to secure the Jade Dragon.
So here's a question. Yes. Going back to the placemat with all the different Chinese, yours, whatever. Well, mine was Year of the Dragon, 1976. There, I betrayed my age. What was yours? Was 1975.
I think I'm the rabbit. Yeah,
Rabbit? There you go. I'm pretty sure I'm the dragon, but it's been a while since I've been in one of those Chinese restaurants where you have the kind of crinkly white paper and the red
print. Rabbit. I am the rabbit. I thought I was, yeah.
There you go. Well, since you've got that up, what is for the year 1900? What's the year? Because that will tell us the Chinese zodiac for
1000, not 1000, 1900. That is the year of the rat.
Oh, Ow, that's kind of a blow for our senior news correspondent, Madam Webb, who is 124 years young. So, yes, she was born on Jan 1, 1900. I know she doesn't mind, but she's a rat, you dirty rat. And she's down with the rats on the corner of Hollywood and Vine, looking forward to giving us those great news scoops. So let's go check that out.
Now it's time for Madam Webb's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Webb. Madam Webb, we're so excited. There is going to be a solar eclipse tomorrow. I believe when you were born, that same eclipse happened. They thought the world was going to end. They were going to sacrifice you. But unfortunately, they found you to be, quite honestly, not a suitable sacrifice. You know, it didn't fit the bill. So you can just thank your stars and garters that you were passed over for a much better sacrifice. Not sure who it was.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but anyway, we're having a total eclipse tomorrow, which would be yesterday if you're listening to
this of the heart.
But the question is, that's my question. I was talking to April about this the other day, and I said, babe, where will we be able to see the eclipse? She says it'll be in the sky.
In the heart.
okay. Yes, it's right here in my heart. We did get our fake eclipse glasses from Amazon, so we will
be we're not in the belt, but it will be occurring over Minnesota, kind of partially eclipse.
Right. We're getting I think
noon to three.
Yeah, we're getting apparently 94% of the whatever that is, and it's at 155.
Please, folks, don't look directly at the sun, even though
former presidents
decided that he thought he could do.
Right. Oh, well. Yeah, I just remember the clip. That was back in 2018. He was just doing this, looking.
Yeah.
All right.
Is it still there? Yes. Yeah. We don't talk about that. It's still there. But what we do talk about is the news, Charlie. And this week, we got some shuffling of release dates from Disney.
Juggling.
We can go through this, and this is looking at really 2025 and 2026, even though there's some things from 2024 that are impacted. Right. So first up, Mandu and Grogu is set to hit theaters. Mandu and Grogu set to hit theaters on May 22nd, 2026. So this will be the first Star Wars film since 2019.
7 years of no Star Wars films. I already have it in our calendar, but I still wrote the word tentative after it because I just don't believe it.
Until you see a trailer, don't believe the hype, folks. And this is essentially Mandalorian season 4, I think.
Right.
I think we can count it that way.
It's the culmination of everything that's been happening since 2019 on the small screen in that time period that starts with Mando season 1 and takes us through Ahsoka season 1, exactly. Of which we will be getting another season, which I'm very excited about. So, so that's in 2026. But then we're jumping back to talk about Tron, which, Todd, where did you land with the Tron film that came out?
I love both Tron films. I know they're not for everybody, but I enjoyed both of them heartily. And this is not going to actually be part of those previous two films. So it will be kind of not a fresh start, but it is going to focus more on some of the different elements of Tron, which, you know what?
Okay.
Why not?
I mean, it refers to it as a sequel, but whatever. You know, again, I don't know that I've seen that film again, and that came out in 08 or 09. The original in 1982 was an absolute favorite, and it's one of the real bright spots of something that Disney pulled off in the 80s, which, because that was kind of a quiet time for them in a lot of ways.
Niche film, but garnered every little boy and girl that loved crazy things that you never thought would occur were just entranced. And it was a regular showing when we had bad weather and they got the real projector out and we watched Tron in our school.
Oh, man. This was, sorry for our younger listeners or middle-aged listeners, that was even before they pushed out the big old TV with the VCR, the one that had to be strapped down so the TV wouldn't fall off. Moving on, we have...
Oh, yeah. Did you say the date? So Tron will be October 10th, 2025.
There you go. So that's one you can actually look forward to for fall of next year. Moving on, Disney is embracing my least favorite trend, which is live action remakes of an animated program.
Did you miss one, Charlie? Did you miss one?
No, that was
Toy Story 5, June 2026.
Did they lump that into, is that going to be a live action remake?
It's right after Tron, they announced, yeah.
Yes. Oh, gotcha. You know what? And that does not apply to Toy Story. I love Toy Story. They can make a million of them. They're still great. That's just very kind of a special one in my family because that was my daughter's first movie, my stepdaughter. So it was before I knew her. But April had purchased, I think, that cassette three or four times because it wore out because it was boom, boom, boom. But anyway, all right. Well, jumping forward to the thing I was going to talk about, my least favorite Disney trend is remaking an animated property. But this is, I feel like, the quickest turnaround they've had. Moana came out in 2015-ish, yeah. I think. Yeah. And so now they're adapting it into an animated deal, but they're also putting out a second animated one. So I'm really lost in this, the thought process here. I mean, clearly it was a successful film, and they're hoping to just keep eyes on it by taking it from two different directions. I don't know, man. What do you make of this?
So this is the weird one. So originally, this was going to be a Disney Plus original like series, and they
so much easier to ignore.
Into a movie. So they turned it into an animated film that is coming out now in this fall. That's why it was a surprise. Nobody knew it was happening. Oh, gotcha. It was because basically we did like what the Clone Wars, you know, that Clone Wars movie that came out, which was essentially the first three episodes. Right. That's kind of what this is. So that's kind of weird, but it's their kind of push to get things out of Disney Plus and charge us for them. So the theater is where they're going to go. And then obviously a live action film with The Rock. Cause he's, you know, he doesn't have anything really coming out anytime soon. So I'm guess that's why he wanted to, you know, get a new role. And that is essentially playing the old role in the live action film in July, 2026.
Right. To just keep it all percolating. So, let's see here. What else we got? They do mention this is on the cusp of 2023 being very disastrous overall for Disney with movies like Wish. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, I saw a headline today that they finally tabulated the losses at about $135 million.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That really super burns my heart. But, you know, this year we've got – it was funny because, Todd, we're less than a month away from our summer movie wager. So we really got to start talking about that. I was at dinner after with all the cosplayers afterwards. And I was describing this to them and telling them about our prize of Zizor. But yeah, we've got Deadpool and Wolverine, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Inside and Out, Alien Romulus, Mufasa, the Lion King. Mufasa. Sure, why not? I turned the F into a Z or an S.
Yeah, I love this one, Charlie. Though the fact that there's a movie coming out starring this is a weird one. It's starring Amy Adams, and it's a woman fearing she is turning into a dog called. It's a horror comedy called Night Bitch. Comes out December 6th, 2024.
Wasn't that real? Yeah, didn't Adam Will Ferrell had the wasn't that one of his spoofs on 30 Rock? It was like that was one of the TV shows on their network.
Oh, probably was. I mean, this does really truly sound like something that would be on 30 Rock. Like, I mean, it is awesome. Yeah, and there's other movies coming out further ahead, but I mean, really, it's going to be lean for Marvel as well as DC this year. So one movie for Marvel. One movie for DC. But you know what? We got Sony and their Spumco to keep us
excited. Oh, the Spumco.
Excited.
Yes, to keep us warm. Well, still talking about Marvel. And again, we're quite a ways out on this. But the thing that is going to, at least in my opinion, save Marvel's collective bacon at the box office is going to be the Fantastic Four. And we're getting that in 26. I don't know. I'd have to scroll down to see the date. Right?
July 2025.
Oh, that's a little over a year away.
Yeah, because they're going to start filming it this summer.
Oh, very good. They have cast Julia Garner, who is Ruth from Ozark. Did you ever make it through Ozark? Have you watched that show?
I know it's supposed to be kind of a family Breaking Bad type of movie or TV series. But other than that, Jason Bateman, it's like they're doing like, are they drug dealers? Is that the thing?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you. But anyway,
I know they do something shady.
They're down in the Ozark area, which of course I had no familiarity with.
Is that like is that like the Ozarks thing?
Northern Missouri?
Like the Everglades of Florida, but just further.
Yeah, no, LA, you're kind of your lower Alabama, like where you lived when you served. But yeah, she played a character called Ruth who had all the greatest catchphrases. She was very deadpan. And then she also played in The Americans, which was that show with Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys, which was on FX, which was totally fantastic. But she is going to be playing a member of the Silver Surfing family, though all of the headlines are saying she's the Silver Surfer. She's a Silver Surfer because she's not necessarily Norrin Rad, who is the one that people really recognize. So she's going to be the chick Silver Surfer, as it were, the female one. Called Shalabal Shamalama Ding Dong.
The whole, you know, Silver Surfer, his tragic tale of his planet was going to be eaten by Galactus. He, Norrin Rad, gave himself to Galactus to save his planet. Shalabal was his lady that he loved so much. And he was basically his punishment. He could never return there, but he did save his people.
And they gave him a surfboard.
Woo! Exactly. Well, in later years, he eventually was able to join Shalabal. And apparently she became, once again, very like essentially a female version of Norrin as well.
Yeah.
And also became a herald of Galactus. They were like a team. And so she has become the Silver Surfer as well. So this is hitting the comics. And I was going to even say, Marvel just now announced, like, hey, here's 5 comics you should read to get ready for it. And it's very Galactus themed.
And they dropped it in Marvel Unlimited as a freebie for people who didn't have Marvel Unlimited. So, yeah, it had the core, I think it's issues 48, 49, and 50, which is the Silver Surfer Galactus. So, yeah, that's absolutely where they're going with this. And then a couple of others. So, but yeah, Silver Surfer is a character that, you know, and again, has been around since the late 1960s, has had a solo title more than once. And of course, we have our cast of the Fantastic Four, which we know that it's going to be, at least part of it is going to be a period piece. I've heard this being discussed, and you know, there's a transition that they end up in the modern era, but all stuff that we're going to find out. So very exciting. But I do recommend Ozark. It's a great show, but it's one of those you got to watch it with the lights off because it is very dark all the time, which is my like least favorite trend in current TV.
Is Missouri like always dark?
It's like the Arctic Circle. No, it's just, they live in, it's like the house that Jason Bateman and his family live in. They never turn the lights on. I don't know. You know, they're drug kingpins, but they don't pay the electric bill. I don't get it.
Oh, you can be our drug kingpin, Charlie.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the Fantastic Four film, we still don't have a Galactus. We don't have a Doctor Doom. We don't really have a lot of other people announced in this. And, you know, with the Fantastic Four, I am now hearing that obviously this is we assume this is in a different universe. It's going to be something else. It's not the 616 because people said they looked at the actual like landscape and the cityscape. It doesn't at all look like the MCU New York, which makes sense. I mean, and if their world in 1960s is modern and our world is not, I think that's kind of cool. And I hope they have like some weird sitcoms we see from that era. And it's goofy. It's like those old cartoons where it's like the city of the future. Cars will fly.
Absolutely.
Car will shave you before you get to work and do all the work.
Oh, there you go. Fantastic. Yeah. So yes, as you said, this will be the film of the summer next year. So, but in the time in between, we still have the reign of Star Wars on the small screen. So we're currently enjoying The Bad Batch, or I am. Todd's not. Our guest Clint last week was also really enjoying it. But we've got that through May 1st. And, of course, all the wags are like, why can't it end on May 4th? I don't get it. Because it airs on a Wednesday. Marketing. Got to be consistent. That's how marketing works. But right when that ends on May the 4th, we are getting a follow-up
Saturday.
To 2022's. It's a Saturday? Or is it on the 3rd?
That's so weird. Well, May 4th, if it's May 4th, which is that when it's airing?
It's also a new comic book day. Yeah, that is a Saturday. But anyway, we're getting a follow-up to 2022's little series of 6 vignettes, which that was called Tales of the Jedi. This has a trailer that we got this past week. While we had long been rumored to get a second season of Tales of the Jedi, we get a title card that comes up and the word Jedi gets broken. It says Tales of the Empire. So we're getting a very cool breakdown. We had a 2-minute trailer. featuring the Morgan Elsbeth character, who we saw fleshed out in season two of Mandalorian, or introduced to in the season two of Mandalorian, and then fully fleshed out as being one of the great Night Sisters of Dathomir throughout the first season of Ahsoka. We do see disgraced Jedi Barriss Offee, who was friend to Ahsoka in the sixth season of the Clone Wars, who ultimately betrayed her and left the, framed her, and then, left. I watched that just recently, too. And voiced by the absolutely fantastic Mary Salinger, very big fan. And then what else did we see in this? Those are the big movie pieces.
Like J.D. Salinger?
I believe there's some kind of connection, but I'd have to look it up. So, sorry. Too. She's also the wife of Patton Oswalt, who's my favorite comic.
I think that's a weird,
it's one of those weird.
So is it just going to be on these two? So this focus is only going to be on these two characters?
I feel like that's what we saw. Now, you do remember last time the focus was on Intel's Jedi. The focus was on Ahsoka from birth up until basically after the events of episode 3.
And
this was, and Yaddle snuck in there, but Count Dooku
come
was
on, the Charlie. Character. She finally got her flowers.
Yeah, her meaning she was dead. That is correct. Sorry to spoil it from 2 years ago.
her burial bouquet.
Well, that's a tough one to, when you're fighting somebody so little, you just cut them in half and be like, "Whoops, oops, sorry."
She's feel
like
you can tell she's in half. Don't stand under the door that falls.
I know. It's like, that's how they got. Don't you remember how that's how the big horned guy got it, Mandalorian, on the prison ship?
Yeah.
Mando kept playing with the doors until they brought the one down that squished him inside. But anyway, this looks fabulous. So these vignettes were anywhere between like 12 and 15 minutes, and they all drop at once over on Disney Plus. So, and shame on Mark and I, we really should have done another one of our Instagram videos, but I think the time got away from us. But you will be able to listen to it the day after you listen to this, because we'll be talking about it on Holocron, which we will record, obviously, before you listen to this. So, but yeah, returning characters, actors-wise, Diana Lee in Santo is Morgan Elsbeth. Meredith Salinger is Barriss Offee, as I'd mentioned. Fourth Sister, who is a character we saw in Obi-Wan Kenobi, is Raya Killestetha. Wing T. Chow is Wing. Might be a new character. Lars Mikkelsen returns as Thrawn. He's a younger version of Thrawn. Jason Isaacs is the Grand Inquisitor from Rebels. And Matthew Wood, the venerable voice actor, is General Grievous, who just goes, tough job. It's good work. Yeah,
he needs some Primatine Mist or something. Very odd.
He does.
You know, they covered that, don't you
Don't you remember how they covered that in the non-canonical Getty Tartakovsky shorts? Because Mace Windu did a force crunch and it crushed him, and so then he had a time breathing. But he didn't have to deal with it long, because it wasn't long after that episode 3 started, and Obi-Wan
get him some metal lungs, man.
Yeah, exactly.
He sees metal everywhere else. So Offee, she becomes like one of the
Inquisitors.
Yeah, I feel like Sister she Seven. Might. Is that what it is?
Yeah,
is that her role?
Seven Sister. But that was the it potentially. That's some digging right there. Now her master was Master Unduli, who was used as bait in an early episode of Rebels, because like Kanan could sense her consciousness. They went to a prison facility and her ghost was walking around. But then when they turned around, they saw that her skeleton was behind a door. And so she was a ghost, but that was Barriss's master. Barriss was a Padawan, just like Ahsoka. And Ahsoka, of course, quit the order, meaning she's not really a Jedi. But Barriss was kicked out of the order, which means that she's a whole lot of nothing. She's in prison and obviously gets recruited.
It's like everybody else with force abilities.
There's only two jobs. You can't go out and be like, I'm going to be an accountant, or I want to own a restaurant. Nope, got to use the force for something.
You know, Charlie, and quite honestly, I'm one of those truthers. Unless I know your Metachlorian count, it don't even speak to me. I need to see it, like, you know, those truthers with Obama and his birth certificate. I don't believe you unless you show me your Metachlorian count. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You're no midichlorian to me. I'm not buying it. So anyway, so very much looking forward to this, and for more crazy theories and Star Wars fanboyism, listen to Mark and I talk about this on Holocron on Wednesday. If you listen to this on Tuesday, that would be terrific. Very good. All right. So this next thing, I watched this trailer obviously just now. Take it away, because I thought, you know, I wasn't sure if this was an existing property, if this is something new, but this is something new on Netflix.
Yeah, so Dead Boy Detectives dropped a trailer. It's coming to Netflix. So Neil Gaiman has really been really more prolific with his properties lately, which is great. He's been in American Gods. He did Good Omens, which, Charlie, I think you and April would love. It's very fun. David Tennant and Michael Sheen. Playing God and playing basically an angel and a demon. It's very fun. They have two seasons, I think, complete on Amazon Prime. And then they did Sandman, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, which I absolutely love.
John loved
as well.
It didn't really grab me, but you never know.
An interesting adaptation of the source material, which I thought they did a good job with, but they changed it as needed. And then another series that Neil Gaiman did is called The Dead Boy Detectives, and it's a fun series. He's done some other, like The Graveyard book, which is cool. It's kind of like an adaptation of, like, he said, what if we could do like the Jungle Book but with spirits? That was the Graveyard book. Well, he did another series called Dead Boy Detectives, which was a comic book, and essentially about two dead teens who haven't passed over, and they decide to solve basically mysteries of why someone was killed and passed away, and basically give them basically solve their murders, because there's
so it's kind of a step beyond like Quantum Leap,
kind of. Yeah. And then they end up actually connecting to a medium who can see them, and she kind of helps them as
Patricia Arquette.
I love that show. Medium was so good.
Did you
watch that?
Not more than, or The Ghost Whisperers, the other one I think of.
Ghost Whisperers was horrible. Medium so good because Patricia Arquette was like, just, she's like, had, she was a mom with kids tired, and I just, and her husband was so awesome. It was like a great relationship, because it felt like the first time I saw a real like marriage on screen, and it was so fun. Love that series. Medium, so good. But getting back to this, it's essentially, there's probably going to be an overarching plot to this, because there's a comic book series I never read, but I know it was well regarded. And I know that this, when I saw the trailer, I'm like, this is going to be so cool and neat. And there's a bunch of other supporting actors in this that will be helping out with some of these, you know, I bet there'll be like a mystery of the week, but there'll also be an overarching plot, which I like. And I think Netflix has done a hell of a job adapting, you know, comic book properties and things like this. So I'm very excited for this. And this launches
this month, the 25th.
It's April 25th. April 25th. And this was originally supposed to be on Max, and Netflix picked it up.
Watch the
trailer, folks, and you'll know if it's for you or not.
That does seem interesting. Yeah, the only actress I saw in there was Yukio from Deadpool.
Okay.
She was the girlfriend. Yes. Who is the medium, or the one of the two mediums.
Yuyu Kitamura is her name.
There you go. All right. So this kind of blew my mind. So there's now been, and the connection to this, I wouldn't even know how you got a connection from this, but since the character of Winnie the Pooh, if I'm getting this correctly, has become public domain, in so much that like Steamboat Willie is now public domain, but so there's a lot of rules and different stuff attached to it. Now Bambi is attached to that, because this is very convenient. This is like a minute long clip. So it's technically called a teaser trailer, is that you open slowly, pulling back in kind of a dark wooded area with a bird that is a dead bird that has been fixed to a tree. And there are two guys shooting on it. A black gentleman and a white gentleman with accents.
British, I think, right?
Yeah. And period clothing. So this is clearly taking place in the past. And the one guy is practicing shooting and doing a crappy job. He's a black guy. And then the British guy said, you know, I shot a deer once. You know, okay.
Exactly.
And then it transitions over to a massive deer knocking over an automobile in the modern day, like flipping it over, like scooping it, like this is like a 15-foot long deer scooping up an SUV in the dark, of course, and flipping it over like a rag doll, and then roaring like Godzilla. And I was like, what the hell are we looking at? And why I didn't read anything about it. Is this a cinematic universe of just monsters, or, you know, basically chilled kids properties that are now public domain, so people can just ruin them for
yes, to try. We're in that domain that
ruining
is open
space
to others. Yeah, because Bambi came out in like 39, so we are now in that era of like things becoming open domain, and they're calling it the Twisted Childhood Universe. And so we've already had two Pooh films. So we had those two Pooh Blood and Honey films, where the second one they introduced like Tigger, and so they've branched that out. And it's funny because we are getting this Bambi the Reckoning film, which
Reckoning.
I love this. It's coming out on March 26th. Wait, what? Oh, wait, really? Oh, no. Winnie the Pooh came out. Blood and Honey came out March 26th. So these there are like straight to video in the Pooh-iverse. But then they're expanding it now. So we're going to see characters like Bambi, Tinkerbell, Pinocchio, and more team up in an Avenger-style movie called Pooh-iverse Monsters Assemble.
I'll bet the Tinkerbell, she'll just be like a Black Widow. You know, just, yeah.
Yeah,
shrinking down and exploding from the inside.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, it goes inside.
Make me clap my wings stabbing a guy. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then we are going to get more films, including Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare and Pinocchio Unstrung.
Pinocchio, nose up your butt.
I mean, I was excited, though, because at least this one with the Bambi, and I mean, it did seem like, oh, it's not a guy in a bad suit, but it's a CGI deer. So I'm like, why not?
Yeah, like I said, it's a bear, or it's bigger than a bear, and then that's what it is. It's a deer that's a bear. It's a deer bear, some kind of mythical creature.
Yeah,
so,
it's not like the first two Pooh movies where it's just a guy in a mask, kind of.
Yeah, right.
I don't think they're actually bears and tigers. Oh my God. Yeah, but I love this. So, you know, make more of these, because you know what?
Yeah.
Life's short, and make money.
It's just fun. So when is it? We getting this fall?
Based on this chart, these movies may take like 3 weeks to make. I don't know.
Yeah, right. We filmed it in one night.
One of these to Shocktober, just because you know.
Well, we should definitely start with the first one. You know.
Oh, you think so? Because we have to follow the canon.
Well, and then we'll do one over subsequent years. So one this year, one next year, one the year after that.
Charlie, do you really want to sign up for that?
You know, Todd, I have an entire Patreon dedicated to terrible films, so you know that I'm not afraid of anything. Anything at all. We'll watch The Room at some point. So.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Well, that takes us out of the news. It's time for me to get out that Fuber app, that Feeble Uber app. We've got to get down to the geekies to talk about stuff that we're enjoying, but I always hate it. I should always love it when we get into the Fuber and they have the radio playing, because you get great informative advertisements just like this one.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite, let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me.
Talk nerdy to me. We're sitting in the Geekeasy, cover band's playing, drinks are poured, and we are ready to get our nerd on. So this week, pretty busy week, but my son was on spring break, so I said, you know, son, you're into this game called Helldivers 2, which it's kind of a cool game, Charlie, but the big premise is it's really, really, you know, it's taking a lot of its, you know, influence from Starship Troopers. So, which is kind of cool. It's an old Robert Heinlein novel.
Oh, yes.
Became a film by Joe Esterhaus. And
such a great film. We loved it. We were in college in 1997.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it is a film that is ironic. It's making fun of fascism. It's doing all those things. And I just loved their filmmaking. So I thought, you know what, Logan, let's watch this because I think you will appreciate what the game is trying to do. Because it's aping a lot of those things. It's basically these guys that drop down. They're called Helldivers, Charlie. They go to a planet and they shoot big bugs. And they're doing it for democracy. They say have a cup of liberty, and they do all these like very even the movie looks like some of the. Do you want to learn more in Starship Troopers? So, you know, and I always worry like late 90s film that was sci-fi genre would it hold up, because a lot of them they don't because of, you know, CGI that's bad or something like this. And then
like the Ghost of Mars or the triple X in space or whatever.
Like the first X-Men film, it's like it's really rough, and we totally get that, you know, the first Spider-Man movies, the first Harry Potter, they all are kind of rough. But when Logan and I, he truly enjoyed this film a lot, which is great.
Yeah.
I think he liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched it so often. I have it on disc and I have it on Fandango, which is probably how you watched it.
Yep. I do.
Cause I own it. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. The 4K cut looks really good. It looks really, really good.
Yeah. And again, this was in the era of practical effects, absolutely, for the most part, certainly for the space stuff. And I think they spent their money well. And this was, who was this, Universal? Who made this? I can't remember.
Good question. No, it was Sony. Sony did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And, you know, 1997 was the heyday of Star Trek on TV. So there was a lot of love for, you know, military science fiction kind of in the zeitgeist. It was a big deal. But this was edgy. And Todd, as you always said back in the old days, it had, you know, bombs and boobs because, you did get to see the delightful.
Charlie Lewis, bullets, bugs, and boobs. So
Did you have to cover up Logan's eyes when she took
it? Nope. And I forgot how much boobs there were in this film. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Although Denise Richards largely avoid that. But
you know, know who was in this movie?
Tina Myers signed up for it and said, hey.
She did. She was showing off her tater tots. Absolutely. You know who was great in this movie? It was Jake Busey, who is, of course, Gary Busey's son. You had the one, like, dumb hick guy who was in, like, a lot of stuff where he got killed, like the big...
Big hoss. Yeah.
And then you had the actor who was Father Gabriel, and he's also Sergeant...
Yes, that was the guy. I'm like, I know him. Yeah.
So he's also Sergeant Carver in The Wire, which I'm going to talk about in a minute here.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, great actor.
I mean, you've got, like, Michael Ironside as the old instructor. You've got Clancy Brown as the sergeant. Clancy Brown.
Jim. Big Jim from The Dome, who was also in Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad as the major, which is like, that is phenomenal. And it was a young heartthrob. What was that one guy's name? The one that was courting Denise Richards?
Casper Van Dien. It was Johnny.
No. The other guy, the pilot.
Oh, and he was like a 90210 guy. Oh, I can't remember.
Not Costas Mandalar, but one of those guys, you know? Yeah.
Lorenzo Lamas.
Exactly. One of those guys that would be like on the 90210 and like, oh, he eventually gets his own spin-off because he becomes a cop. Well,
who's Kelly's new boyfriend? But he was the other pilot guy who kind of steals Denise Richards
handsome
away.
Handsome guy.
This was a who's who. And I remember, you know, things were written about it back in the 90s that were like, hey, kids, let's have a war movie. And this is basically what it was. But all about like earning your citizenship and going out there. And they, you know, everybody, and they have communal showers. So they're all standing around showering. Talking about, hey, why'd you join up? And the one girl was like, well, I want to get a license to have children. And I heard it's a lot easier when you're a citizen. Yeah, exactly. And of course, all those people die. So whoops, because she didn't get to have the baby. Because, everybody. Practically everybody dies in this. It's very brutally violent.
Yeah.
but fun in a way, I guess. The bugs are great.
You know, I mean, and it's great appearance by, you know, Doogie Howser, Neil Patrick Harris, who, that was kind of a cool, you know, because he was kind of like, after Doogie Howser, was trying to find his way, what he wanted to do.
It was right before
Harold and Kumar, you know, where he's like, he became like almost like a, So I really appreciate what this movie did. It knew what it was doing. It embraced it. And I think the other part was, you know, this is a very gruesome film too, where the creatures coming through and like just cutting off heads the training sequence where Rico, you know, fails, but not because he was doing anything wrong really, but because of, you know, the where the guy takes the bullet in the head and it's like, oh
yeah. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there were a lot of, you know, decapitatable dummies in this and stuff. So
exactly. one of the things I did point out, I'm like, the bugs still look amazing. I mean, like the fact that they could do that. So like so many of them coming through and it didn't look fake and it still looks great. So it works well when you do like not humans. And they did some practical effects too, of course. Yeah. But really good. So
These had a couple of low budget sequels, the third of which had Jolene Blaylock, who was T'Pol on Enterprise. It was just absolutely, and I watched it just because she was in it, and it was absolutely dreadful.
And there was an animated series, Charlie. It was in the early 2000s called The Roughnecks, and actually was pretty decent. Now the special effects were, you know, it was kind of like Beast Wars, kind of like era effects, but you know what? Considering that was like a animated show, was pretty impressive.
Not bad. Oh, well, I know you're going to razzle dazzle me and sell me on this next thing. So I'm all ears.
Yeah. So the next movie I saw, Monkey Man. So this film by Dev Patel, made for a very small budget, and actually was rescued because it was financed, but essentially got put on a back burner. And Jordan Peele.
So it's a rescue film. It's like,
well, rescued it. He said this film needs to be shown. So Universal ended up picking up the rights for like $10 million, which, you know, considering this, when you hear about this, this movie's already made almost $10 million. So it's already made its money back.
Paid its bills. Nice.
Yeah. So Monkey Man is essentially John Wick in India, is the best way to put it. It's about a man who doesn't really even have a name. He's kind of unknown. And
wait a second. I thought he was the Monkey Man.
He is the Monkey Man, but he goes through it. They give him, he basically has a fake name. So kind of really doesn't have an identity, and you find out why. And this is essentially a revenge movie similar to John Wick, but it's about a boy who essentially had horrible things happen to him as a child. He's living on the streets and he wants to have revenge. But in the meantime, he's been training, and to make money, he essentially goes in the underground fighting circuit, and the ringmaster behind is Charlton Copley, the guy from
Charlton Copley.
South
African guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So he's like kind of like the fight MC, also runs it. And so Dev Patel wears this monkey mask because that's part of, there's a character in Indian mythology called Hanuman, who essentially is kind of mythological figure. He wears that mask when he fights, and he does it to win money because he was trying to get money to like fund himself.
The Money Monkey Man. Got it.
Exactly. Yeah. So the fights are brutal, but they're really well done. And along the way, he gets himself into a plot and basically a plan on how to make this work. And you find out that he's not exactly really ready to take down the system. And then it takes a bypass, and it really does a cool thing where it's showing the grunginess of India, because I mean, it's a very poor country, and that's a big theme of, like, you know, the poor versus the rich. And he's essentially saved by this temple that embraces Shiva, and Shiva has two identities of creation and destruction. And it's also a place for transgendered people in India, which I didn't expect to be a storyline in this, but it is very pro and supportive of transgender because it's not a supported, you know, viewpoint in India. It's a very different culture. I work with a lot of folks from our Indian office and in Mumbai. And so I wasn't expecting this. It was beautiful how they embraced it. And then they were part of the story. So I don't want to give any more away of this. I think the fight scenes were amazing in this. Obviously, there's a little you have to have a faith of, or a leap of faith in this, because after we have a fight, he had like no bruises on his face. After you know, like really,
he's a mutant. If like it was Wolverine. Me,
I get a bruise if I rub my eye the wrong way these days. Being well, just, means you like wake up with a bad back because you sneezed wrong. But I thought Dev Patel, you know, a kid that was in like The Life of Pi and all these movies, Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah. I mean, he's come a long way in the fact that he directed this, did all the cinematography, and really it's a great movie if you enjoy like a revenge tale, but also like great fight cinematography. And if you're interested in like India and what it looks like now,
revenge fighting. History,
I really enjoyed it, but it's not for everybody. Totally get that.
That's cool. Good deal. All right. Well, jointly, and again, I watched this a month ago, is that Star Trek Discovery is back. They dropped two episodes this past Thursday. We're going to be taking that in extreme detail on Code 47, which we'll record later this week, and it'll be out on Monday the 15th. But Todd, you watched the first episode, correct?
No, actually, I watched both, the first and second. Oh, you did watch both. There you go. Yeah, I snuck it in because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to finish. That was when I was a little delayed today. I had watched almost all the second episode, and I'm like, oh, I need to finish that. So, but I did. And Charlie, it was a kind of a tale of two cities for myself. Discovery has always been about story arcs. So, you know, you kind of get introduced where it's going and you get some character development, but essentially you are going at one place. It's not at all like Strange New Worlds where you have set stories in each episode. So it either lives or dies because of that. So what I like about the season, it does feel like this is a wild adventure. It doesn't feel like it's the end of the world. Like, oh my God, we've got to get the Red Angel or well, we're going to die.
It was a Red Angel in season two, which is how they ended up in the future. And or then it was creatures. The burn.
Yeah.
And then it was the OMC or whatever the hell it was last season. That it was everything, the DNC or something that was, you know, eating the universe. And so, this is different. So, I think we should probably keep the spoiler free.
Yeah, it feels like there's a treasure to get. This feels like
it's treasure hunting, but it ties back to a really obscure plot line from latter seasons of TNG.
Yeah. I thought it was early.
It had to do with it with Picard and his archaeology professor from the past had found this thing, and then the guy gets killed off, and Picard takes over the mission.
I'll have to watch that episode again because I'm not up to speed on it.
The Chase is the name of the episode from season 6.
I will check that.
Great episode, self-contained. So it's 47 minutes, and you'll be in good shape.
Okay, cool. But what I wanted to say too is, one of the things I disliked about the first episode, but I think they course corrected by the end of the second episode, was I am really done with the whole book and the whole relationship.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of that. I'm so tired of it being like, it's her relationship with Book is more important than anything else in the world. Yeah. And I thought we were done with that. And it comes back. I'm like, really? That's the only person in the damn universe that everybody knows that he's the only dude.
Yeah.
Which is really?
And I feel similarly. I don't really care for the Adira character or the relationship with Ian Alexander's character, who is the Trill. Couldn't care less. Because I just don't enjoy the characters, and it's just the plot line.
They're a little flat.
And Ian Alexander, I'm sorry, is just not really an actor that really blows me away. And they're not. And again, I've seen the first four episodes. I'm going to rewatch one and two this week because we're going to record on it this week. So I've not seen it for about a month, but they do delve into the relationship between those two. And I just can't make myself care.
Oh, so I know because they do go at the end of episode two, like, oh, we're doing this. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And once I heard that, I'm like, oh, are we going to go back to the least interesting character of this show?
I'm glad I'm not the only. And I think it could be an age gap thing with me because we're talking about two characters that very clearly represent the transgender community. That's great. Trek is all about representation, but I think for viewers like Todd and myself, or even, you know, Peter or, you know, Aaron, I don't want to speak for all of my co-hosts on Code 47. It's not something that resonates with me, but it's great that it resonates with someone. But I'm also glad that it's not like, let's drag this out and make it a whole big old dealio.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's not what the characters represent. It's the fact those are characters I feel have no edge. They're like very flat. Like I said, they don't like resonate like some type of emotion. It just feels like they're vanilla or bland. It was a character, Tara in Buffy was like that. I mean, I loved Willow. She was passionate. She was goofy. And then the person they paired her up with, I felt was milquetoast. I'm like,
it's not that I didn't like
the relationship. I'm like,
you look at all the other actors, first of all, you know, they do a lot of emphasis trying to pack on the other bridge characters, and they did a lot of that last season. We're like, well, I really,
they haven't
really
done
like
any
so-and-so
of that this season, though.
And that's and bits and pieces. We got a great new character, a captain played by Campbell Trenny, who we know from Battlestar Galactica. He was Leoben the Cylon. Forgetting the name of the captain's character, I'll remember it once I rewatch. Rainer? But Rainer. There you go. He's absolutely fantastic. But I mean, again, you got a great actor, and he's going to be a pivotal part of the season.
Well, he's a foil. He's got edge.
Yeah.
You need conflict between these characters. Can't be all lovey dovey emotion. Well, and I'm going to hug it out. And
that was always the big parallel between TNG and DS9, because the TNG characters all very homogenous. They were all Starfleet. Everybody got along. Where on DS9, you had factions, and you had one guy who was a bartender and he was a scumbag. And then you had the lawman who hated authority. And then you had a couple Starfleet people and a couple Bajoran people, and there was conflict. But yeah, you're right. It's just, it's great that there's representation. I'm not trying to put that down with the Deera and Ian Alexander's character, who's so bland that I can't remember the name of the character. Gray. Thank you. Boy, you're doing a better job than me. I just really don't care for it.
Gray's haircut. Gray's haircut. I mean, come on. I'm a man with no hair. If you can grow hair, have a good haircut is all.
Yeah. Don't cut your hair with garden.
Don't waste that opportunity. Cause you know, at this point, I want to grow a faux hawk. I want to do all these cool things. I want dreadlocks, I can't do any of it unless I get a wig.
I'm happy about what I still have. But anyway, we are very grateful to have the support of CBS in providing screeners to our network to watch them, although I'm the one who watches them. So I'm very grateful. Thank you very much.
I do think I was going to say one last thing. When Saru mentions, this should be your number one, and when they said that, I almost puked. And I'm glad we got what we got, because at this point I felt like Saru is going to be like Danny Glover. I'm too old for this shit. One last day, I'm like, if they fucking kill Saru, I'm going to be so damn pissed. And we're going to see someone cry her heart out a million times. And I can't take any more tears from that character. I can't. I'm all teared out.
Todd, I don't know if you listened to our cruise wrap up that April and I did, but I got to meet Sonequa twice. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful woman. She was so kind. And both times when I met her, she was literally walking past our cabin door. I opened the door and there she was walking by. It was so random.
Charlie.
Yeah, that was it. And then I caught her the second time walking by as we were all leaving the
somebody should give her a box of Kleenex and say, need this.
That's what I handed to her. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well, hey, let me blast through this right quick. We have been, I can't remember if I mentioned this, but one of those that's new to me, but the show's, you know, 20 years old, is The Wire over on Max. Todd, have you ever? You've watched the whole thing?
I know it's a great show. A lot of great characters or actors come from it. It's just one of those shows. I'm like, I'm never in the mood to watch a show about bad things happening in Baltimore.
It's so gripping. Now, I think the show absolutely got better and felt less dated as it went on. Because the first season was 2002, and it's like, it was all about beepers and stuff. And it just seemed very outdated. But it's very gritty. It's kind of like, you know, that opening crawl from, you know, episode 3 of Star Wars. There are heroes and villains on each side. You know, everybody's trying to do something, and some of it is bad. There's a whole season where one of the higher up police chiefs corrals all the drug dealers into one area to juke his numbers, as they say multiple times, to make other districts, to make the crime stats go down. And it's like, okay, well, you've made some areas safer for the people that live there, but for the place where you pushed absolutely all the drug dealers, things are infinitely worse. So it's like, there are zero right answers, because they're all drug dealers and gun violence.
All bad.
It's all so bad. And yeah, so we just started season 5 tonight, and I'll go back and keep watching it, obviously, when I'm done here. But it's gripping. It holds up. It is frequently been described.
What's the name of the big character? It's like
Idris Elba got his start.
What's his name?
It's Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell.
That's right. That's the character everybody talks about. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I know I need to get like a Michael T. Williams. No.
The late Michael Williams. Yeah.
He was in it. And then
Lance Reddick, who just passed away.
Yeah. A lot of great actors in that show.
Main cappers. Main dude is, I keep forgetting his name, but he's a British guy. It's funny. Yeah, it's funny because my mother lives in Southern Maryland, which is Baltimore is the big scary town that you would never go to. But I love
she got closer to get closer to supply, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I love it when somebody is trying to ape the Baltimore accent and it's completely unnatural. They have one police lieutenant who is just really over talking, like killing himself trying to do that.
I couldn't even pick out a Boston or a Baltimore accent, to be honest. Well,
it's heavier than a South Jersey Philly accent.
Okay.
If that helps. It's heavier.
It would be like somebody, I got a Rhode Island accent. I'm like, okay.
Okay.
You sound like you're either from New York or Boston.
It's not like from New York. Flippity flappity floop. And one of the guys in there is that one of the cops is a Sergeant Hawker. They call him Herc. And he's played by this dude. He was in Ray Donovan. He was in the most recent season of Reacher. He was the cop, the bald fat guy. Yeah.
I have not watched that yet. I need to. It's on my pile of shame, Charlie.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. So anyway, so I watched that. And then real quickly, we watched, and it's one of these. I know this is based on something very recent events.
It's the Stonks, right?
There was another movie about the housing crash back in 08 that was made about that. Again, money stuff is completely out of my that is not my lane. I do not pay attention to that,
Charlie,
kind of stuff.
Money can be traded for goods and services.
Okay, that much I know. So $20 can buy many peanuts.
That's right.
Got it.
$20. Was that $100 for 100 tacos?
Exactly. So this was a movie that had a lot of big names. You had Nick Offerman, you had Seth Rogen, you had Paul Dano, who I've never really been fond of. He's just kind of weird looking to me. I don't know why.
If you said bland, it's probably his picture in the dictionary. Oh,
exactly.
Looks like
Shailene Woodley, American Ferreira, was in this. Pete Davidson was in this because he was Paul Dano's character's brother. But Paul,
does he do drugs?
Probably whippets at some point. Yeah. Paul Dano is your lead character, and he's playing this real life YouTuber who goes on and talks about finance and stuff, and he creates this revolution in the fighting back the short selling of stops of GameStop, which is a store that many, many of us frequent. And this all really happened during COVID. So this is very, very recent. We found it over on Netflix. And again, while the stock market and stuff is just not my jam, I thought that this was absolutely fascinating. And it was a very much rally of power to the people kind of thing. So I enjoyed it and I would highly recommend it. It's, you know, it's a lean 90 minutes. Actually, it might be a little bit longer. I think it's like $1.45. But it's worth the time and you should enjoy it. And in the end, do the good guys win? I mean, it's real life, so the good guys never win, but hey.
You would hope that, the system is always rigged against us, but you would hope that this would divulge that there are gaps in the system that hopefully these guys actually kind of hurt all of these liquidators and everybody in the pocket, and maybe they'll not go deep again like this.
That exactly right. So yeah, go check that on Netflix. So that's it for me, and that is the end of the Geek Easy. Todd, time to get out my Fuber app. Not the Fuber app. Sorry, that's what got us here. I'm going to spit in my drink because I don't care for this place yet. We still keep coming back because it's cheap. But I got to get out that Air Qantas app. Time to get down to the land down under. Tina, hologram Tina, RIP, and the mutants do await for us. We have a game for them this week. TV on the fours. Let's go check it out.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. The mutants have been gathered for a topic or game to be entertained. And this week, we are doing something we've done in the past. This year, we already did it with movies. And that is looking back at years that end in fours. And when we look at TV, we did it with movies. So what we're going to be doing is look at the history of movie or with TV in years that end in four. So we'll be doing 74, 84, 94, 2004, 2014, to give you kind of a historical perspective of where TV was in those years. So I will be starting off with ratings, and we'll get into anything that, you know, kind of give you an idea of like what was popular, and then we'll give you a look at what premiered in that year as well. So when we talk about this, we start with 1974, the year I was before I was born.
Right.
I was not available. My parents were probably watching TV when they thought about what would be great. Yes, having a boy named Todd. That's what they were thinking.
Yeah. Give me a story about a boy named Sue. Go!
Exactly, yes. So with TV in 1974, we start with the ratings. So I'm going to go from the bottom to the top for the top 20. So in NBC, we have the NBC movie mystery at number 20 with a 21.5 share. And that was a special. So that was probably like one of those cop movies, like it would have been like
Columbo,
right. The special movie. Yeah. Then we had Cannon, which was another detective that had a 21.5 share. Mannix, essentially the same. Man, I think was Mannix like Robert Culp?
It wasn't Manimal. Oh, God, Robert Culp, somebody else whose name is not spoken, just like his partner, Bill Cosby.
Yeah, maybe. For my then we had The Wonderful World of Disney coming in at 17 or 16. The Rookies, I have no clue what that was, at 15. Nope. Bob Newhart's show, the original one, coming in at a good 22.4. Then SWAT. Oh, my goodness. Almost all these are cop shows. Then we had Police Woman with Angie Dickinson.
Oh, my goodness.
A tough woman who can beat the bad guys.
Right. Oh, and then Kojak. Don't you go change your baby or whatever. Yep. What did he say?
Who loves your baby with a lollipop that looks like me. Little House on a Prairie.
April's favorite.
On the Prairie, not the Prairie.
Next one's your dad's favorite show.
Yeah, The Rockford Files. Almost cut off his finger watching reruns of The Rockford Files. Mary Tyler Moore coming in at number 11. Oh, my goodness.
Right there in the Twin Cities. We watched the first episode of that recently just because it came up it as a suggestion.
Gotcha. Yeah. So folks, pay attention to the rating share as we go through this, through the years where it goes. Like I said, we're in like the 20s, mid-20s. And then watch where we go in the next couple of decades. Hawaii 5-0, 24.8. You know, more dun, cop.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, Maud, you know, we get Dorothy Spornak.
I'm gonna hum all the themes that I can think of.
Which Maud, I think, was a spinoff of something, whether it was
Archie Bunker,
the Family,
Archie Bunker, restaurant?
Maybe. That was number 9. The Waltons, obviously a very wholesome show.
Boy. I don't remember the song.
Good Times, another Norman Lear show. Rhoda, that was a spinoff of Mary Tyler Moore, I believe.
Rhoda. Okay.
Yeah, MASH, that was renewed. It was on season 3 already. In 1974, it was on season 3. With the Jeffersons, that they
debuted. We're moving
that
on
year.
Up.
That was number 4, another Norman Lear show, a spinoff of Archie Bunker. Chico and the Man, Paul
Looking
Rodriguez.
Good.
Yeah,
and Freddie Prinze Sr.
Was it? Oh, that's right, not Paul Rodriguez, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, yes. Paul Rodriguez was in the 80s, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, that was also a debut that year, a sitcom, Sanford and Son, fourth season.
Near. You got it. All right, All in the Family.
And then All in the Family. Yeah, it was funny because these were all on like CBS. So these are NBC and CBS. So I thought these were all on CBS, but spread around. So NBC and CBS were like the top dogs. ABC, you know, their top show was SWAT. And so, you know, you see how these networks do and how they did. So there you go. That was it. Yeah, so sitcoms were huge and so were cops.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. All right, so we've taken the big leap.
We're doing premieres. So these would be notables of shows that you may not have realized it. So one of the big ones, and it wasn't even on the top 20, was Happy Days, debuted in 1974. Charlie, the $6 Million Man debuted in 1974.
Oh, my goodness, we have the technology.
As well as The Land of the Lost, that Sid and Marty Krofft show that we love so much. Oh my goodness. Planet of the Apes debut.
That was a in 1974. Show? Oh my gosh. Oh,
yeah. Yep, they had a couple of different shows on TV. Then we had Kolchak, The Night Stalker, which was essentially the pseudo beginning of The X-Files with Darren McGavern, who actually made a character on The X-Files. That PBS show that went on for, I think it's still going on, actually, now. And I'm looking for anything else. Oh, the Shazam series debuted in 1974.
Shazam with Billy Shazam. Very
and
nice.
A notable cartoon, Hong Kong Phooey, debuted.
oh my goodness.
Yeah, so at that point, I would say those would probably be the big shows if
How
you're
could
interested.
You have possibly left out That's My Mama, Clifton enjoys being a barber in Washington, D.C., Todd. I am ashamed
the new
of
adventures,
you.
Well, The New Adventures of Gilgan the Cartoon and Partridge Family 2200 AD also debuted.
2200 AD. All right, well, let's take a leap forward to what I've always considered a benchmark year for pop culture.
We'll see if TV holds up, Charlie.
We will. I did. We did. That was the year that gave us, you know, great releases from the Transformers, G.I. Joe. We had his, you know, an Indiana Jones movie, a Star Trek movie, so the Ghostbusters, so on and so
forth.
Cartoons,
but anyway, those are all syndicated cartoons, so they won't appear in this.
That is. I was merely painting a picture of this year, the year of our Lord 1994. But anyway, on the big three, and it's very interesting because you started to talk about Ratingshare, how they have eroded of what's considered on top, but counting down from 20th, we have a three-way tie for 20th at a 17-1 share. We have The Fall Guy, which is a movie that's coming out, but that was that Lee Majors?
It was Lee Majors, and it was also Heather Thomas.
Oh, Heather Thomas, exactly. TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes, which is
Ed
just...
Ed McMahon and Dick Clark, was that who hosted that
everybody,
show?
I mean, that's just basically YouTube these days, or TikTok. And Scarecrow and Mrs. King, wasn't that Bruce Boxleitner?
Oh, yeah. And Kate
some
Jackson.
Other chick? Kate Jackson, exactly.
Charlie's Angel, yeah.
Number 19 was personal favorite, Night Court. That was the second season?
Wow.
First year.
Two seasons?
But two seasons, so maybe like a half.
It was like a mid-season replacement and then came back for the fall.
That's going to be my guess without looking. Okay. Highway to Heaven. That was the 17-6 year for Night Court. 17-7 was Highway to Heaven. That was Michael Landon before he got touched by an angel. Yeah, he had his own spinoff. For some reason, I was looking at this last one recently. 8-3 comes in with Kate and Allie, which were two either divorced or widowed women.
Divorced moms. Living together.
Exactly. Newhart, was that Bob Newhart yet again? So he's back with another
show? Like Peter Scolari.
There you go.
And Larry, Daryl, and Daryl. Yeah.
Exactly. Magnum P.I., who he was an ex-Navy guy who fought in Vietnam, but he was from Detroit.
Yeah, five seasons. That debuted in like 1980 then? I don't know.
I think it maybe 82. I don't know.
Crazy. It says it shows on the chart number of seasons. So it says fifth season was in 84. Yeah.
Oh, that's maybe again it was one of those like filling it in. So something called Riptide, which
I don't remember this, Charlie. This was like it was like A-Team on a boat. Where it was like Perry, what's his name? There was a nerd, and they had a boat.
Always a nerd. And they had
solved mysteries on a boat.
You're thinking of Night Boat from The Simpsons. Cheers was in its fourth season. I just don't think.
It says season three. Yeah.
In Cheers. No, I'm looking at where it says network rank. We're looking at the wrong thing. The way to the right. Yes, I'm seeing that now.
If you go number of seasons, that would tell you where it's at.
Got it. But that's number of very good. Hotel was a show about I'm assuming a hotel that was in its second season at that time.
That was James Brolin and Connie Sulca.
My gosh. Yes. That rounds out the top 20. A show on CBS called Crazy Like a Fox is number 10, bringing a 19.9 share. Falcon Crest and Knott's Landing are 10 and 11. So that is two nighttime soaps.
Oh my God.
And then Murder, She Wrote, which was not related to, what was I trying to tell you? I thought Angela Lansbury was the same Lansbury that did like the Poirot novels. That was really good.
Agatha Christie.
Oh, Agatha Christie. There we go. Yeah. I swear. I swear there's a connection. Simon and Simon, that was two brothers. Were these two brothers that were stunt guys and one of them was Major Dad?
One was Major Dad. I can't remember.
One of them was just some dude. Of course,
dude, yeah.
Yeah, very famously, as we're getting into the latter half of the top 10, we have the A-Team. Great show, benchmark of our childhood. Four Vietnam vets on the run as soldiers of fortune. Family Ties, great show. We watched the entirety of it within the last couple of years. So the thing that launched Michael J. Fox into stardom. 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes is still ongoing, isn't it? It's been around for 50-something
years. Oh, yeah. Yeah, hasn't stopped.
Click, click, click. We'll skip this next one. No, it was The Cosby Show, and it was very early. This might have been the first. Yeah, this was its first season, which went on to become one of the most popular programs of all time. One of my favorites that Todd loves to make fun of is Dallas at number two. This was season 7, and it ran for 11 years. So this was this was way after Who Shot JR. I think that was more in 1981.
Charlie, that's why you love Yellowstone. It truly is.
You're right. It's just Dallas further north. And then number one was Dynasty, and that was Joan Collins. And who was the other chick? Alexis.
It was Linda Evans. And then they brought in like Diane Carroll. They brought in Heather Locklear was in that show.
Right.
And,
oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. All right. And then premieres for this year. I'll blast through this year because it's a lot of the same stuff and some of the stuff we touched upon. Night Court did premiere this year. Charles in Charge, my namesake of an actor who I used to respect, which was Scott Baio. No longer.
I will say Charles in Charge, one of those shows, like it was in network and then it went to syndication, which was very simple. Right. And I liked the first version better because it had like two brothers and one sister. So yeah, much better. Nicole Eggert came on and just became very generic. Yeah,
exactly. Murder, She Wrote did drop that year for the last time with Agatha Christie and Poirot.
Yes.
This was the first year of Who's the Boss in Miami Vice. Two very big shows of the 80s. Yep. We mentioned The Cosby. V, the miniseries, which has been talked about by myself and Brian Cole over on
Huge
our Patreon.
Event. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Thomas the Tank Engine. Oh, that one touches my heart because that's my kids. Love that.
Hunter, Charlie. My dad loved Hunter so much.
What did he always say? Would he say, works for me? Wasn't that his catchphrase? Works for me. Or something.
You know what? I don't even know. Hunter was like the generic, like Dirty Harry. I don't know. Fred Dreyer is a football player. Yeah.
We have the new Mike Hammer. My grandfather must have loved this.
Oh, yeah. McSplain.
Airwolf. Airwolf, which is another great one. Kate and Allie, which we talked about.
A team on a helicopter.
Exactly. And then Punky Brewster, which was set in Chicago. Exactly.
But we did get the Transformers. They do know that. Yep. Kids Incorporated. Oh, did you ever watch that show? I love that show.
That is a huge favorite of my wife's. She talks about it all the time. Yeah. All the time.
Voltron.
Yes. Let's see here. There was a version of ER that was called E/R.
Oh, the comedy. That had George Clooney on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. He couldn't get Muppet Babies. Came out this year.
Remember that show? It had Jason Bateman in it. He was the kid who was causing all the troubles.
Oh, my God. Babies. As I said, Muppet Babies came out this year. Yes, exactly. Yep. And then we're kind of getting down. So anyway, we'll call it good at that unless you see Snorks. So Saturday morning cartoons, which were big for us.
Blue Thunder, the spin-off of the movie. With Bubba Smith and, kind of crazy. Rainbow Bright.
Wow. Wild. All right. Yeah. So that's 84. All right. Take us into the 1994, the year I graduated from high school.
Okay. 1994. We're going to ratings first. Here we go. Start at number 20. And once again, I mean, we started off like things being in the 20s. Now we're starting off at number 20. Dave's World is 13.2. That was the Dave Barry with Harry Anderson playing the main role. Monday Night Movie on NBC. That's crazy. You get like a rerun film and it was in the top 20. 13.5. Then you got CBS with their Sunday Night Movie. So almost everybody had a movie night.
Must-see Monday, right?
13.7. 2020, this is now This is, oh, season 7 of 2020. I was thinking 60 yeah. minutes. So that was a big show. 14 share. Then Murphy Brown. This is season 7. Wow. Still around. 14.1 yeah. share. Frasier got a, this is season 2 of Frasier. 14.3. And Charlie, we get to a show called Hope and Gloria. I have no clue what this is.
Sounds familiar, but it'll probably be in the other window we open. Yeah,
I couldn't tell. Yeah, so that got it was also on NBC first season. It was renewed. Ellen season 2, 14.7, before she came out.
She's still in the closet. That happened in 97, I think.
Exactly. So. Then we had Mad Men of the People. I think this was like a Dabney Coleman show. It was canceled first season, but yeah. it was a top 11 show, Charlie, and was canceled. That's insane. Ouch. These numbers wow. would be like, this would be like the number one show
in
ever.
Its first season. Yeah. Yeah. yeah they had a Mad About, it says Mad About You for this next one, but Thursday night only. So it had a rerun night.
Did it move to Thursday? Maybe this was season three.
I'm trying to scroll down and see.
Is that must see? Else. Is that must see TV or what era was?
Well,
that?
this was before Friends. Friends came out in 95-ish, I think. So.
No, this is the first year of Friends. If you go further up, you'll see.
Is it further up or further down? Oh, yeah, very good. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right.
So, so Mad About You is that like NBC comedy block? 15.2 million or 15.2 share. Murder, She Wrote, still strong on season 11, top 10 show. 15.6. Roseanne in season seven.
Tied with Roseanne. Yeah, still going.
15.6. And
that show, The Conners, is still on, isn't it?
Oh, I know. Roseanne. Like, I think Roseanne was only on one season of that.
Yeah,
and six seasons later. Yeah.
She got herself canceled, but people still want to watch it. It's crazy. Yep.
Friends, first season at 16.1. Wow. NYPD Blue, where you could see Sipowicz's butt. And
yes,
then
lots
Hallmark
of
Gosselier became critically acclaimed. Was season 2 of that show before Jimmy Smits came on. That was like kind of one of those mature rated shows that was shown late at night. 16.5 share. Right. 60 Minutes, season 22, still top 5 or top 6. 17.1. Monday Night Football. Football becomes a huge thing as we'll see going forward. 17.8. Grace Under Fire, man, talk about her. You know, she had a lot of problems.
Yeah, she's not really part of anything. I thought her name was Grace. I don't even know.
Blair Butler. That was her name. Was the era. The era of like comedians getting sitcoms, and they just
that'll last for a season. Yeah, exactly.
Which that was number 4. Home Improvement, going at number 3 at 19.9 share, season 4.
Tim Allen from Michigan, yeah.
ER, first season. That show went on for like 25 seasons, I think.
Sure did.
Less.
A little less, yeah.
Yeah, and then Seinfeld, coming at 20.5.
Season 6.
Season. Yeah,
wow.
Juggernaut.
I think it must be, there must have been like a lot of little half seasons and stuff, because that show came in 89 or something like that, but it could have been a little bit here, a little bit there.
I think it was like one of those things, was like a mid-season replacement, so it was one of those weird ones. Okay, so we get into like what premiered. I won't talk about the things that were already on the list. We get Spider-Man, the animated series, Charlie.
Spider-Man. But we have my so-called life, one of April's absolute favorites.
One season. Exactly. Then we get Touched by an Angel, which, you know, it was part of the CBS Jesus Squad with Texas Ranger. They had kicking ass and saving souls.
Party of Five on Fox. Yeah,
launched 3 of the most attractive women on TV. You watch them. Let's see. Look, going through down this list, Chicago Hope, which is basically like everything, the beginning of the empire of Chicago shows.
They've launched all those. Chicago DPW is the one I always joke about. So yes, the trash of Chicago.
Yep, Gargoyles, one of my
favorites.
Debuted at that point. Then we get into the Magic School Bus, which my son loved.
Sister,
was that on C? No, that was on WB or UPN.
One of those two. Yeah. Let's see.
Then we get one of those weird, like wacky, like CBS shows called Due South about a Mountie that comes to team up with a kind of cranky Chicago cop.
Right.
Yeah.
Can't pass up Sweet Valley High. And we talked about Ellen, of course.
Weird Science, kind of one of those weird syndicated TV series based on a movie.
Oh, how funny.
I actually enjoyed that quite a lot with Vanessa Angel. So attractive. Oh,
I remember this one, New York Undercover, because it was on Fox, but also was the launch of the career of Michelle Hurd, who is Raffi on Star Trek Picard, as well as, Alex Rodriguez. The actors, anyway, it was very hip, like based on rap culture, but they were undercover cops in New York. Very gritty, but also very stylized.
I like this, Charlie. We got a show called Viper, which was syndicated, and it was in the near future, an organized crime unit group known as Outfit becomes a major force in America. I think Viper was based on, it was a show based on a car that was the coolest thing in the world. The old Dodge Viper. There you go.
And then I love one of these. This was a favorite of my brother's that he really championed. But Earth 2 on Fox.
Oh, Earth 2, yeah. Clancy Brown was in that one. Yeah, Steven Spielberg, I believe. He was behind that show. Didn't direct it.
One of my all-time favorites. I have it on disc. The Critic, either spun off The Simpsons or it was the other way around. I can't remember.
I think it was one of those things where Fox was looking for a new show. And The Critic was on ABC. So it was actually ABC trying to get into the animation game. But we did get Reboot, which is a cool like CGI, the company that did Beast Wars and things like that up in Canada. Thunder in Paradise, Hulk Hogan having a show in a high-tech boat solving crimes.
Do you remember how much we loved Duckman?
Duckman was so good. I love that. Jason Alexander on USA, yeah.
We got a Fantastic Four and an Iron Man this year, though I don't think either one of them were very... lasted a couple of years, yeah.
No, but The Tick.
It was a show on Fox
Animation I absolutely loved. Great show.
I remember watching this one in the summer of 95. It was Models, Inc. And actually, there was a cop played by Robert Beltran before Voyager came on. He was Chakotay. But that was one of the first vehicles of Carrie Ann Moss, who is now going to be in the Star Wars universe in just a month here. So very exciting stuff.
We're back to 2004, Charlie.
Let's do it. All right. 2004. I was a fully grown adult out there in the world doing some stuff. So my God, to look at this. So now we're in full swing of cable television, different stuff going on. Your audience is fractured from at a high when ratings were typically in the low to mid 20s at the bottom of the top 20 to now being at the low of a 5.2 for The Amazing Race, which is we have a two-way tie for 20. That would be Boston Legal and The Amazing Race 7. I am aware of Boston Legal because I know that Shatner was on it for a while and Rene Aubergeois, who was Odo on DS9, he was on it for a while. But yeah, that's about all I know.
Spader.
Yes, and Spader. Now, we were just talking about the show Medium, which you enjoyed, and then House, which I know debuted this year because I looked over. House. And House was a great show with, what's that dude's name, Hugh Laurie? Those were both tied at 18 with a 5.4 share. And then we're getting into some new and some heritage sitcoms. We got Two and a Half Men in its second CBS season. Yes. And then Everybody Loves Raymond. So that was obviously their, at least, powerhouse for the lower end. We got a debut that year at a 5.8 share of Lost, which was a show that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about. April and I just watched the entirety of the show within last year. And does it hold up? That was a show that really got pinched by a writer's strike. So in a lot of ways, not so much. CBS had a show called Without a Trace coming in at number 14. Not sure. I know that
for like another 10 seasons, I assume.
Yeah, I guess it was doing okay. Oh, and we unfortunately had the third edition of The Apprentice, which
had survived, Charlie. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I know. We have spared a lot of misery in this country. Monday Night Football, Todd, as you had mentioned, live sports became increasingly more important in this era because you can only find them on TV. So people were watching. And you could only find them on the networks until they weren't on the networks anymore. That was number 12. Those twos were tied for 12. Extreme Makeover Home Edition. This was the, hey, move the truck. And they redid somebody's falling so apart. Alabama Shed. Yeah, exactly.
So much reality shows.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this really was the era. The CSIs were in full swing. The Miami one with with David Caruso. This was its third season that kicked off the top 10. An edition of Survivor in Vanuatu. You can have to tell me how that worked. Thank you very much. That must be an island of Polynesia. There you go. The Watcher. No, that's very close. Came in at number 9. We're in the share. There was a 7-3. So we're in the sevens climbing. We had ER was still on. Wow. This was season 11 with the 7-4 share. We have another survivor in Palu. Is number 7 with a 7-5 share. The Apprentice, too. Okay, so he was on multiple nights, and each one was
one was wrapping up, maybe, group. Or maybe somebody else took over for him, like, the other season?
Not quite sure, but...
Two seasons?
At number 5, we had the inaugural year of Grey's Anatomy, which is still on.
Holy
cow. It's coming back. Yeah, it's still on 20-something years later. Yeah. CSI, this was season 5. At number 4 with a 9-2 share. Desperate Housewives, this was the first year of this. My ex-wife loved this show because that's how she pictured herself. Instead, she was just jobless. And I don't know why she was so desperate, because I worked. But anyway, so I got dragged into watching a lot of that. This was, however, the fourth season, but the Unstoppable Dynasty of American Idol. It was on twice a week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, over on Fox, pulling a 10-9 and an 11-1 share for parts 1 and 2. So yeah, it was kind of like the Beatles having, you know, the top 5 spots on the charts. But yeah, American Idol was indestructible back in those days. And I think the fourth season was that Carrie Underwood? I think it might have been.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything past like season 10 that had notable stars, but yeah.
Right. And I already called out a lot of the debuts, House and Lost. Drake and Josh, which was the unfortunate focus of that show, quite on set. So we're not going to say anything more about that. Desperate Housewives I touched on. Deadwood is something I've never watched.
Yeah. Me neither. Man. I heard it's full of bad people in the old West that drop
out. Yeah. We probably should get it. Battlestar Galactica, which Peter and I have been talking about over on the Patreon, debuted this year, though the miniseries was the previous year. Doc Martin, about some guy like wearing Doc Martin shoes. That's great. I have no idea. Entourage, which is just a show about dickheads.
Yes. All old people love Doc Martin.
Oh,
just ask him, hey, you like Doc Martin if you need an opening for like a sales call? Like Doc Martin?
When you say old people, you know who loves Doc Martin? Gen Xers like us. So just be careful.
Well, no, my in-laws and my mother.
Oh my God. I thought that was a big one for Veronica Mars, which was
I've heard good. And I think I've only watched like 2 episodes of it.
I feel like we've seen some, or if not, one of the Stargates came on this year, the Atlantis show. In addition to the CSI, which we already talked about, there was a New York edition that came out this year.
I think
year.
That was the last official spinoff.
Was it really? Okay. Boston Legal, which I think we've already touched upon.
Gary Sinise was the head of CSI New York. Yep.
The very, very racy, the L word over on Showtime about lesbians in Los Angeles. Lesbians in Los Angeles. Very good.
Peppa Pig?
I had no idea it was that old. Yeah, Dennis Leary and Rescue Me. He's a firefighter in Boston. Shocking. Joey. Oh, after Friends after Friends ended. Because, that was the end of it. We have the Justice League Unlimited. Very well respected.
Great series, yeah.
And the Batman.
That was on Kids CW, I think. Or Kids
Corner Gas. I think that's a Canadian show, but it does sound familiar. Uh-huh. Ghost Hunters, the first year of this.
My Wife.
Yeah. The 4400, which is about a reappearance of 4400 people that had previously disappeared. I'm just looking for anything else that really jumps out. The Backyardigans, it was one I watched with my kids.
Foster's Home, that was a big fan, big part of my wife and I. We loved that show by Genndy Turkowski. Yep.
Very nice. Well, now we're kind of into the dregs. So anyway, that is 2004 in a nutshell.
I'm confused. It says Charlie the Apprentice debuted that year. Was there 3 Apprentice seasons in 2004? Because it says it debuted.
Was it just on all the time? Oh, wouldn't it be great if he was just still doing that shit and you could just turn him off?
That'd
be so great.
And he would say it's the number one show, even though it's like on reruns. Yep,
absolutely. Right. Oh, my God. All right, take us home with A Decade Ago. In 2014.
Yeah, this is, it's the beginning of the streaming era. So, I mean, you're going to start seeing like things probably not reflected in what people truly were watching. So if we get into ratings, we're going to go start at the top 20. We got start number 20. Scorpion. This is one of those like, CBS, edgy. We got a hot goth chick who's also the IT person. And they solve mysteries with tech. 3.1 share at number 20. Family Guy. Season 13. This is right, after it was canceled and brought
the show
back.
That died and came back. Yeah, killed in 01 and came back in 05.
Exactly. So, yeah. Still going on. 2.5 Men finally canceled after Charlie Sheen was finally off the show and Ashton Kutcher came on. 3.1. Big Brother Wednesday. 3.2. Wow. Yeah, that was season 15. Once Upon a Time, it was season 4. That was a show that we enjoyed, you know, kind of retelling like fairy tales in a modern context.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of, but fell off a cliff. That was a 3.2 show. Criminal Minds, that was, you know, CBS love, old people love murder shows. Mm-hmm. Season 10, that was at 3.6. The Blacklist, that was James Spader once again doing like this, nice. This computer show. Right. Predicted like murders and things. That was 3.7. The Voice Tuesday show, 3.7. Sure.
It had fallen out of the top 10. Season 11. Yeah.
3.7. How to Get Away with Murder. Season one. This is like the Shonda Rhimes, like Grey's Anatomy, then How to Get Away with Murder.
So you're either in a hospital or you're trying to have an affair or get away with killing people.
Politics or, get away with murder, things like that. That was 3.8 share. Football in America Part 3 special? I don't even know what that is. I think it's supposed to be like Football Night in America because that's weird. 3.9 share. Right. The Voice, was in season 4, you know, going off of Idol. That was a 4 share. Scandal. Talked about that. 4.3. Yep. Modern Family, that was season 6.
Wow. Yeah, that thing old. It was powerful just because it's so relatable.
A Big Bang Theory season 8, 4.6, and that was one of the biggest sitcoms ever on TV. It just did forever.
And it shows up again at number 4, but it was on twice a week, I'm guessing.
Or it was reruns, probably.
Must be what the 2 means. That's so crazy.
See how powerful football is. Then you get like the OT, which is basically a post-game show on Fox, 4.6. The pre-kickoff show on Sunday Night NFL per kick, number 5 at 5.3. Big Bang Theory, once again, 5.6. Thursday Night Football kickoff, 5.9. Remember when Empire was the biggest thing in the world? It was going to change name, Terrence Howard, Taraji P. Henson, and that one guy who claimed
Jesse Smollett.
Said he got beat up by cops and all the stuff, and then it came out all the things. So weird that ended so badly.
Right,
Sunday Night Football, 7.3.
It's so telling that just like what we were saying in the in 2004, that the thing that really matters at all, even just looking at a decade ago, is live sports, because that's where you can find it. Where everything is just is video on demand now, and it was really starting to come into shape here, and now it's all the way gone.
So. Yeah, I looked down further down the list, Charlie, just to give you an example of like a show that you thought would have been huge. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 2 was number 42 at a 2.7 share. And this is like when the MCU was on fire. And that show could only get like, where it was at. So that tells you right now that network TV was not, and these are, we're seeing only network TV on these lists. So that tells you that, viewers struggling. Were elsewhere. They were elsewhere. Yeah.
April loves Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I will always. And new this year. Plug. Here's my one. Star Wars Rebels at number 28.
Oh, I was going to say. So we start at the bottom or the top. So True Detective, big series on HBO, debuted that year.
Oh, we just watched it. Yeah.
Fargo, another big critical darling. This is when
April loves it.
Golden age of TV,
watch it. Yeah,
but not on networks. Once again, these are like networks that you just you had to have a cable subscription. Outlander, one of your favorite, Charlie.
It's fun. It's coming back eventually. Yeah. Yeah, it's coming back eventually.
Of that, The Flash. This is like the darling of the CW. debuted that year. Let's see, what else was a big one that was a surprise? Gotham. Remember, Gotham was like kind of controversial.
Oh, Fish Mooney.
Had its ups and downs. Yeah. I loved it at times and thought, like, why is this still on?
I think we just really... Oh, Silicon Valley. It was a show that April and I love because it's about what she does. There's Scorpion, which we were trying to figure it out. Yeah, Goth Girl and its tech.
Yep. Penny Dreadful, a really cool show on Showtime, which I thought was really interesting. It was like a, it was like The Extraordinary Gentleman, but done well.
And you got to see What's Her Face Naked, which worked for me.
Yeah, you already mentioned Star Wars Rebels. Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. How is that?
Nine years
old. And he's still cranking than that, I'm looking at anything else that was a huge surprise. Blackish. I remember that was became a huge phenomenon.
Definitely loved it.
Yeah. That was kind of it.
Broad City over on Comedy Central. I thought that one was fun. Well, that's a wrap then, huh? This is fun. I like this. So we did movies and we've done TV.
We did toys. You usually do a toy. Yeah, toys of those eras.
So that will be for the future. But, well, good.
That'll be a future episode, yeah.
Funzo dunzo. Well, good deal. Well, that's a wrap. Friends, as always, thank you for joining us. Todd, where do people find you out there?
They can find me on Threads at Teoxtra, at Secret Friends Unite, and still on the Twitters at Secret Friends U and at Teoxtra. Once again, check out our Discord, check out SecretFriendsUnite.com, and check out Patreon.com/SecretFriendsUnite.
They're